Coming up next, another edition of Reaching Out with Gregory Floyd, president of Teamsters Local 237.
Welcome to another edition of Reaching Out. I'm Gregory Floyd, president of Local 237 Teamsters. With me, I have a very special guest, Sean M. O'Brien, general president of the International Brotherhood of Teamsters. Sean is a fourth generation Teamster. He joined the Teamsters Local 25 in Charleston, Massachusetts at the age of 25. Working in the rigging industry as a heavy equipment driver in the greater Boston area. O'Brien became business agent in 1999, and in 2006, he became the youngest president of Local 25 in 128-year history. Under his leadership, Local 25 membership increased by more than 30%. O'Brien has also helped raise millions of dollars for charitable causes, including Local 25's signature event, Light Up the Night, an annual gala to raise money for children with autism. In 2011, he was elected Eastern Vice President of the International Brotherhood of Teamsters. Today, General President representing 1.3 million members. In addition to fighting for workers, O'Brien is a proud father of two sons, Sean Jr. and Joseph. Sean, welcome to Reaching Out.
Thank you very much, Greg. And I just want to clarify one thing. I became a Teamster at age 18, working in the rigging division. So I'm a little long in the tooth with 32 years in the Teamsters Union. So I wish I joined at 25, but unfortunately I came in at 18.
Okay. Now, let me ask you before I get in. I know it's been 218 days since you became president of the International Brotherhood of Teamsters. But let's go back to something that's in your bio, autism. How did you get involved with raising money for that charity?
So ironically, it's a great question. Everybody assumes when you do charity work that you're affected some way personally by it. And that wasn't the case. And when I took over the local in 2006, we also have our own health and welfare fund. And we saw that there was a spike utilization in childhood, psychology claims and everything else we're paying. So we did a deep dive to see why there was such a increase in these claims being paid out. And we uncovered that there was a lot of our members' children who were being diagnosed with autism. On top of that, we had some retirees at the same time who were bringing up their grandchildren for various reasons, also had the same diagnosis. So we took a step back and said, look, what's our charity of choice right now? It's diabetes. And being ignorant and, anything else, we said, well, look, diabetes are, people that don't take care of themselves, don't exercise, don't eat well, and smoke cigarettes. Like, they have a chance if they change their lifestyle. You know, these folks, especially our members' children and retirees' grandchildren, this is something that, they were born with. This was something that needed immediate attention. So we jumped in as fast as we could, developed a charity, all the efforts of saying, look, how can we make our members and retirees' lives that much better, especially in light of, there wasn't a whole lot of information out there about autism. There wasn't a whole lot of support out there. And there wasn't legislation to support and mandate private insurance companies to fund programs that support families with autism. Lastly, which is probably the most important, we got involved when these children are younger, with the hopes and dreams to be a cure, but, we're far away from that. But what do we do when these kids transition into adulthood and the parents and siblings have to bear the burden of worrying about what's going to happen when they're adults? So, there was a bunch of different buckets we got involved in, and we support, try and achieve every single bucket there, whether you're an adolescent, whether you're an infant, adolescent, preteen, and then adults. So it's evolved. It's been great. Now, ironically, 3 years after we started the charity, my oldest son, who was 9 years old at the time, was diagnosed with type 1 diabetes with no rhyme or reason. So everybody assumed that we were going to change our charity. And, you know, the position that we took as a family, but also this, we're not doing this work to benefit ourselves individually. Thankfully, because of the great health insurance that we have as Teamster members, we don't have to worry about, you know, my son's care. But this is a bigger problem in the autism community that we need to focus on. And it affects everybody we know. So that's basically the history lesson on what we've done. We've raised millions upon millions of dollars. We have done a bunch of different things. We've raised awareness to families affected by autism. We've reinvested a lot of the monies raised into the community to support programs for autistic children. We've helped finance adult housing for people affected by autism who no longer are subject to the system. And we've also created job opportunity. But the most important thing, we got legislation passed called ERICA insurance reform that mandates private insurance companies to support programs and families. So tremendous work we've done. And we've actually changed a little bit of the thought process. I know in the Boston area, where a lot of people nationwide refer to autism as a disease. And if you know anybody that's autistic, you know, they're healthy. There's no usual birth defects as a result of it. So it's not treated so much as an illness anymore. It's a lifestyle where, you know, we can help the people affected by autism, whether it's the person directly and or the families, enjoy a lifestyle while they're finding ways to, find some sort of means to an end with the research.
Okay. Wow. So that's really truly a labor of love, what you're doing for autism. In the 218 days, you had a chance to go across the country, up to Canada, all over, making an assessment. Where are you with your assessment of the Teamsters? What have you found? What have you learned?
Well, I know during the election cycle previous to us winning that our assessment from a campaign perspective was that there was a lot of faith lost in the organization, that the general consensus was that, you know, the organization wasn't moving in the right direction, wasn't focusing on the needs, and was basically babysitting the organization. Obviously, you know, you were involved in it. We had a pretty aggressive platform, that a couple different things we ran on: transparency and inclusiveness. We also ran on a diversity platform, the inclusiveness of that platform, but also just restoring the faith and being visible in the workplaces and supporting, you know, the most important part of our union is that our rank and file members. So that was the pre-election campaign stuff. Since the 218 days, we've been, and it's not just Fred and I, it's our whole administration, inclusive of yourself, that we've been a more hands-on international union. We've been more visible in the workplaces. We're not focusing going to talk to leadership or locals or joint councils around the country. We're focused on going into the workplaces, having the member-to-member conversation face-to-face, looking each other in the eyes. So a couple of things, I think, and based upon some of the victories we've had recently, whether it's Cisco, Red Cross, DHL, we've been successful in putting Amazon on the map as one of our targets. Politically, we've repositioned ourselves as a powerful figure in Washington, D.C., which is now trickling down to, you know, state and local areas. So I think what we've done is we've restored the faith with our membership. We've instilled the fight back in our membership because they know they have the support of the leadership. And we've identified the common enemy, and that common enemy is not Teamster against Teamster. It's Teamster against corporate America, Teamster against politicians, Teamster against any organization that is trying to hurt working class people. We've done that on a national level, but we're also doing it on a global platform as well, where we're meeting with the top, and we're affiliated with the ITF, transportation unions in the world, because look, we have a lot of common fights in the States and in Canada. And those common fights are with employers that are global employers that are in Europe and globally. So I think we've reestablished ourselves as the face of the labor movement, in the last 218 days.
Okay. So next year, which is just a few short days away, you'll be renegotiating a UPS contract protecting more than 340,000 UPS Teamsters. Why is securing a strong contract so important to the labor movement?
Well, I think a couple different reasons why. First and foremost, we need to take care of our rank and file members who work under that contract every single day. As I think we're all aware in the Teamster world, especially during the election season, that there have been over the last several national agreements some unnecessary conditions that we have agreed to that actually hurt our rank and file members and gives the company the right to do certain things that they don't really need and want. So, first and foremost, we've got to negotiate the strongest contract, make certain that the employer, UPS, which is the largest collective bargaining agreement in the private sector world that we know, we need to take care of our members first, but also signal to corporate America, especially, the Elon Musks of the world and the Jeff Bezos of the world, that this is what you're going to get when you have to work under a collective bargaining agreement. That's going to be the template that's going to help us organize the Amazons of the world and any other, Googles of the world or this gig economy type of employers. But, everybody is watching these negotiations because if we do not secure the strongest agreement, which we will definitely secure the strongest agreement, then we've just left the whole labor movement vulnerable to another attack by corporate America and politicians. So it's up to us to take care of our members, number one. Two, to empower other people that want to organize, and they can point to the UPS agreements, such as Amazon employees, saying, look, this is a great agreement. These are protections we want. This is why we want to join a union. And three, to ensure that corporate America knows that, they can't take us on. They might have more money, but we get the most important tool in the world. That's our rank and file members. And, we have courage and conviction to take on the fight. We don't need the money.
Yes. And shortly after Labor Day, the Teamsters announced the formation of a brand new division to organize and empower Amazon workers. So you mentioned Amazon. What will be the biggest challenges to building worker power at Amazon?
Well, I think we've already started that. To your point, we launched the Amazon division as a result of a resolution passed at the convention in 2021. Look, we've got a proven track record of representing and negotiating the strongest contracts in this arena, which is the e-commerce parcel division. That's one portion of it. But Amazon has a footprint in almost every division that we have, whether it's airlines, whether it's maritime, whether it's trucking, and rail. So, it's important to us that we organize Amazon because that's our biggest threat as a labor union. We have a division put together. The challenge that we face at Amazon, different than our most employers. Look, Amazon started with a 15,000 person book club, 15, 20 years ago. Now they are a 500,000 person, $1 trillion company that thinks they can dictate global policy and procedure on how goods and services are provided. So we have a big, big struggle ahead of us. That's one aspect of it. Second aspect of it is they treat their employees so bad, they focus on distressed communities. And I know that in New York, under your Joint Council 16 leadership, Tom Gesualdi and yourself, you've done a tremendous job of, keeping them out because they won't agree to terms and conditions that are going to, protect the communities that they allegedly reinvest in. And when I say protect the communities, I think Amazon has a proven track record of making promises that they're not going to keep. It's been proven, and there is documentation that when they anchor down, they look to anchor down in distressed neighborhoods with a high immigrant population. There is 150% turnover ratio in Amazon with their current employees, that are direct employees. And then they utilize an independent contractor model that doesn't allow for these part-timer people who are direct employees a means to a full-time career. So when they're saying we're providing 30,000 jobs per community, they're providing a temporary workforce that they can recycle in and out, use and abuse, with no intention of ever creating full-time careers for these folks, which further does not help the communities and the neighborhoods. So, you know, we've been doing a great job exposing Amazon's practices. We've been doing a great job of empowering the Amazon workers. I think you've seen in New York, Southern California, Boston, Illinois, and many other places where they've walked out of work and held their own strikes just to demonstrate how bad Amazon is. So that part of it, we've done a great job. We have to do a better job of educating these politicians who buy in on a state and federal level about how awesome it is to have Amazon in your community. Do the research, go look, and you know, you'll find out that what they say and what they do are two different things. So, you know, it's not going to be a traditional organizing drive because, look, with such a high turnover ratio, you know, an organizing drive, we know the process through the NLRB, and it takes 406 days to actually get a first-time contract once you're successful through the process. So, you know, that portion of the utilizing NLRB to organize, although works great in some arenas, in this arena it doesn't. You know, we just basically got to put pressure on this company in the communities. It's going to be a grassroots worker-to-worker, member-to-member effort that I think if we can have strong chokeholds around the country, it will force Amazon to have to come to a realization that they're not going to be successful unless they sit down and have a relationship and negotiate a contract with the Teamsters Union.
That's very good. That's a very strong strategy, and I'm glad you are taking that on. Amazon is one of the largest companies in the world, and they've gone unchecked for decades. In nationwide polling from August, almost 75% of Americans say they approve of labor unions. Those are the highest numbers since 1965. What is fueling this resurgence in unions like the Teamsters?
Well, I think what's refueling it is, look, we've come out of almost 2.5 years of the toughest times we've ever faced with the pandemic. Right, I think not only the Teamsters Union, but every organized company had the ability and has demonstrated through the hard work of their unionized employees that, you know, we collectively, when I say we, unions, kept this country moving, providing goods and services through one of the toughest times. And, you know, you see, you know, I always say corporate America has amnesia or Irish Alzheimer's, right? They remember everybody that has screwed them, right? They can't remember birth dates, anniversaries, anything else, but they remember in their minds who screwed them. And, you know, when this pandemic was going on and our members, like many other union members, were out there providing goods and services with zero protections with vaccinations, with the potential total disregard for their own health and safety and their family's health and safety indirectly, they're out there being hailed as heroes, right? And once the pandemic started to calm down, it was, you know, these employers did not want to recognize why they had record profits, why they were so successful, while the majority of our members weren't reaping the benefits of their goods and services provided. So I think part of that, not just on a Teamster area, but I think nationally, people are fed up and they want to be recognized for their hard work. And, you know, when you're focusing on three of the wealthiest people in the world, and you look at where our membership stands, people are fed up. People don't care about the bottom line of a balance sheet. They care about respect and dignity in the workplace. They care about having a future. They care about having a modest lifestyle. And I think people are fed up. And in this next generation, if you look at the Starbucks, if you look at Chipotle, you look at a lot of these other areas where, look, they're not afraid to stand up to the boss. They're not afraid to demand what they're worth. So I think a lot of that is a lot of the fights that have been taken on with a lot of these corporations that haven't been taken on before. I think there's a disgust for the, I don't think anybody has a problem when people, you know, are doing well and making a great living. But I think people have a problem when, you know, these corporations are making record profits and not sharing the success for the people who actually truly are responsible for the success. So I think, you know, we've got a great opportunity here to drive that 71 or 75% number up to 80, 85%. It's just, we've got to get, and I think we've got support of the communities, but we also got to get, you know, Washington, D.C. and these politicians on board with saying, hey, enough is enough. Three people shouldn't control the wealth of more than a third of our poorest people in this country. So combined income. So, you know, we need to obviously do a better job, but I think we have to enlighten people like the policymakers in D.C. that these corporations need to be held accountable. And that's the reason why I believe there's a favorable rating to a unionized workforce.
You're listening to Reaching Out. I'm Gregory Floyd, President, Local 237 Teamsters. With us, a very special guest, General President Sean O'Brien. What would you say to workers out there, especially the younger generation, who may hesitate to join unions? And what can the Teamsters offer American workers today?
Look, we have been doing this since 1903 as a Teamsters Union, right? So that's almost 123 years of proven track record on represent working people in every, from A to Z, airline pilots and zookeepers, right? And you look at, you know, I always like to, when I talk to the younger potential members, it's like, look, you know, I'm not sure what your parents do, but, you know, our whole goal is to provide opportunities and careers that you can go to work day one and know that you're going to be able to retire with respect and dignity. You know, you're going to have a pension. You're going to have affordable health care. You know, you're going to have a future. But most importantly, you're going to have protections. You're going to have dignity and respect in the workplace. And look, I always tell people, our goal is to represent our members to the fullest, but also we need to be a conscience to the potential threats to our organization. That's, you know, greedy employers. That's, you know, corruptible politicians, white collar crime syndicates known as corporate America. And if you want to go at it alone, you're not going to be successful. We have to do a better job of talking about our history and what we've achieved over the last 123 years, but also embrace the new ideas of this next generation who may not have any generational connection to the unions. Look, I'm a fourth generation Teamster, 32 years. I know the reason why we've had such the life we've had. It's because of the union. The union's the one that negotiated free healthcare. I told someone this recently, I'm 50 years old and I've had the same Teamster healthcare my entire life. And, you know, growing up in a house with two brothers and we're very close in age and raising two sons very close in age. And, you know, there's always those trips to the emergency room for horsing around, but we never had to compromise any care and health care because we knew that the Teamsters Union had our backs. The same holds true when we're going to work. We know that pensions were negotiated. If you talk to this next generation of Teamsters and you ask them what their parents have done, the majority of them probably were in the dot-com world, working 2 or 3 years, getting a severance package, moving on, and dependent upon a 401k to retire. Now, if anybody's tracked 401ks in the last 12 weeks, I think most people have lost 33% of their net worth. You talk to our members who have pension and have retirements that they can retire and maintain their current lifestyle. That's where we got to do a better job of talking to this next generation.
Well, thank you. And unfortunately, that's all the time that we have. I mean, this has been a great, great moment, great interview. I thank you for sharing some of your time with us. And if you want to come back at any time, you can come back. You're welcome to come back. If you have a message that you want to get out, you're welcome to come back and get that message out.
I think the message is clear. We're bigger, faster, stronger, and we're going to continue to build this labor movement.
Thank you. I'm Gregory Floyd, President, Local 237 Teamsters, and you've been listening to Reaching Out with our General President, Sean O'Brien. Thank you very much for coming on Reaching Out.
Thank you, sir.
Thanks for listening. And don't forget to tune in again each and every Saturday at this same time for another edition of Reaching Out with Gregory Floyd, President of Teamsters Local 237. The preceding pre-recorded program paid for by Teamsters Local 237.